7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy Anella here with you with another amazing Croc podcast. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Angel, you gave me a week off. Thank you, my friend. I needed it.
And you know what? For the looks of you, you look rested, and you have a beautiful, awesome haircut, my friend.
Yes, I cut every hair down to the grass, down to the dirt.
There it is.
Angel, I'm so excited today. We get to talk about a really, really important subject today with one of my favorite people from work, Janie Capizella. I call her Cappy. Her name is the mighty, mighty Miss Jane. She's absolutely an outstanding colleague. She takes her work so seriously. She really gets invested in the advocacy for our cancer survivors / thrivers. And there's nobody I would rather talk to or talk with regarding some of the challenges that we have on a day-to-day basis, fighting for our patients to have their insurance companies acknowledge them and validate them and allow them the approval so they can move forward with their treatments. It's hard enough with the diagnosis. It's hard enough with getting yourself prepared to deal with that information. It's hard enough to get yourself psyched up to have those toxic treatments, and then to make your life even more miserable, your insurance company drags their feet in their approvals, or they don't approve you at all. Janie, welcome to the podcast once again. As you've told me, you've been on the podcast before.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm sorry,
don't remember me from the last time.
Well, I have to say, Jane, we're over 100 episodes now. So
I know, I saw that. Congratulations.
So I told you this offline. I'm going to now embarrass you in front of millions and millions of people by saying that I don't think there's a colleague that I prefer to work with than you. One of the things I look for in a coworker and a colleague is someone who has passion, someone who is excellent at what they do, someone who never stops wanting to learn, who strives to be the best they can be, and is valuable beyond any sort of verbal description. Jane, you fit that 100%. And I just want to let you know that absolutely, God bless you. Looking so forward to speaking to you.
Thank you. Very kind. Thank you.
So let's start, Janie. Last week, I think you heard my podcast about what happens during the process of getting the prior authorizations. The patients have to come in and they see us and we put together a treatment plan, and then everything gets submitted and then they go into that waiting game. You know, from your perspective, you sit with me every morning, we go through our huddle, we sit down, we go through the patients that now require. Compare and contrast the way we're looking at cases now as opposed to just say 25 years ago when you first started in the field.
25 years ago, there was no prior auth. We didn't require it on anyone. Then probably about 15 years ago, it started with maybe the CT, for the setup. And then every year it's been more and more. But the last two or three have been major. So they've gotten progressively harder, tighter. They don't budge, meaning, and when I say they, I mean insurance carriers. They've lost the touch of forgetting that this is a person that is very sick and needs to be treated. Nobody says, oh, I want to go get radiation treatments. It's not like, oh, I want to have a nose job or something. So there has to be stricter guidelines for them. And I think that's coming into play, but it's taking a while. I know Congress has really stepped up with that. And so many, 30 states so far have the momentum of it. Of course, we're not in the list yet, but Congress has brought this to the Senate because they know this has to stop the madness that they're doing right now.
Absolutely. And the pain that the patients go through, the pain that we go through as providers to try to get the insurance companies to speed up the process. It really can you describe that, just that it really is almost like a cloud, right? Every morning let's talk a little bit about that and the emails that we send to each other every day, making sure everybody knows who is at risk or who is the people who are on that hit list.
Yes. So we're definitely doing all we can from our side, like being more proactive and getting the codes to the patient access to start the authorization process immediately. Of course, even with ones that are considered emergent, the feedback we're getting now is that the insurance carriers have so many claims put in because they're requiring it on everything, not just radiation. So they're overloaded, understaffed. So now they're like, no, you have to wait. And they won't even allow you to speak to a clinical person or a manager or a case manager to try and get things put through. Like we just had a keloid case. Keloids have the surgery within 24 hours. They have to be have to have the radiation therapy treatments. And you saw what happened. It took 3 days for the auth to come in. They just it doesn't mean anything anymore.
It's like the Wild West, Jane. Janie, and you're now Jane not only does works with our authorization office, what would you say, access center or whatever,
Yes.
in regard to that. She also has so many other hats she wears, advocating for our patients, Angel. So really, Janie, your expertise lies in coding, I think.
Yes. Yes,
And
it does.
then so let's talk a little bit about those codes that go to then the authorization people.
So you, the doctor, along with physics, but really the doctor is making the clinical treatment management, deciding what would be the best treatment for the best outcome for this patient. You let me know then, I put the codes in place. So there are different types and modalities. There's, from what we call conformal treatment to specialties of IMRT, SBRT, and SRS. Right now, what insurance companies are doing is they want less treatments. So they want us to hypofractionate everyone coming through the door because that means obviously it's going to be less money that we're going to be billing that insurance carrier. Is it, mo I mean, most of the times it's fine, but they're telling us what to do, which is it's crazy in my eyes, and that's where I hope Congress finally gets through with this, that why are insurance companies having the final say of what type of treatment a patient should have when they don't know anything about radiation? You're an insurance carrier. You're not. They have clinical people there, but they're not radiation oncologists.
It's
So it's very
absolutely
frustrating.
phenomenal. It really is. And Jane, that's such a well said and beautiful point. When you're looking at this process and you were looking to get changes or trying to get some sort of what would you say, legislation to kind of take away some of the power of the insurance companies because they've really put healthcare to a standstill. Is there any advice you can give, to a survivor as they're going through this process and they're wondering every second, every day when their treatments are going to start? Is there anything that they can do?
I mean, they could write letters to their county legislators or I would start with Congress. AMA is another one. There's actual, I mean, we have the website. I was researching some stuff before this, and I found it very interesting because I found out stuff I didn't know. AMA is really involved in this. They have had enough. The hours that are spent taken away from the clinic, from the patients, to do this, to get something authorized, and the money that's spent for us to try and get this is crazy too. But it's the patient is the bottom line. Why are we doing this? So there is letters they could write to their congressman, their local congressman. They could put a letter, they'd get a hold of me. I could give them some PDF files of how to start it. You know how that saying is, this the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So that's how it happens, you know, like it has to be more and more of us putting the letters together, just bombarding them. And then they bring that to the Senate and up into the Capitol and stuff. That's where it has to go. It has to be done, you know, well above us.
Is there
But
anything going on in your society and in the billing coding societies that are also working on behalf of the patients?
yes. So my society, the one I'm certified through, is he is like a pit bull. He writes letters and is, I mean, he actually has private numbers to, you know, Medicare and stuff like that. But he is on it. And he's always telling us anytime we do a seminar, we have to write these letters. You have to get them in place. You have to get them out there. I brought that back to like our billing office because, you know, it would be good if it came from like directors there and stuff. I don't know what they do with that because, you know, I can only give you the food. I can't force you to eat it.
Beautifully said, and that's a good place to stop. Angel, I want you to throw in your two cents as always.
I just think, and first and foremost, well, welcome, Jane. Yes, definitely to have you on. It's good to see the face with the name as we all work together. So I think, the first question I have, and I think we kind of touched base a little bit, but I just wonder where they felt, and I'll say it, where was the ball dropped, in the case of when did this all just spiral in the different direction of making the patient more of a number rather than understanding, their needs. That's my first question. And the follow-up to that would be, do you feel that there's an opportunity or a chance that somewhere down the line this can be in favor of the patient?
Where this started, I think, and I mean, I can't say for sure, but I'm looking at it the way I would think right now, and things I've read is that insurance carriers from the top have told the bottom people, this is what you say, because it lines their pockets. So all they care about, and it's sad to say, is about themselves. So when you take something and you turn it and make it about yourself, that's so evil, first of all, that you're doing it on the backs of people who are really sick and you know, time is of the essence for them sometimes. The other thing, your second question was, do we think that it will change down the line?
Yeah, in other
I
words, yeah,
think
will
we
it get
are
better?
headed in the right direction. But so the whole thing with the Congress thing, too, of course, when they bring it there to start these bills, to do something like this, to go up against, now you're not going up just against one insurance carrier, you're going up against many. A project like this, when they put it together, would cost $16 billion. They don't want to hear that. So what Congress is doing now is urging CMS, meaning Medicare and Medicaid, to step up because they're almost like the parents of the insurance company. Basically, what CMS sets in place, everyone's going to sort of follow because if CMS could do it, the other insurance carriers know they can.
Kind of like a domino effect.
So if they could get, yes, if they could get the CMS to start to make this authorization, prior authorization, a little more tighter, meaning turnaround time. It should be 24 to 48 hours. It shouldn't be, we're waiting weeks on certain patients. I mean, this is weeks. So what's happening is patients are ending up in the hospital or they're becoming sicker. You know, the outcome's going to be worse. It's not going to benefit them. So I'm thinking it's going in the right direction, but just like anything else, it spiraled so far out that it's going to take so long to reel it back in.
And that's a shame too, because in the field of my part of the field, I'm noticing an influx of patients that are trying to be seen, whether it's something as easy as an MRI, meaning as easy as it is to get a schedule, to get to put in a request for an MRI, but then they're so backed up that they have to get it, they have to get A, the appointment, they have to get that appointment within that 45 days or within that 30 days of their blood work. And then on top of that, they're waiting for the authorization. I was one of those people. I had the blood work and lined up. The authorization took forever. Before you knew it, my authorization went through, but my blood work expired. You have to repeat the process all over again. And then trying to get an appointment within that time frame was impossible because they didn't have anything for another 3 months.
You know, there's one other thing they're trying to put in place, which would help also in the long run. We also have a cap on the time that the authorization expires. And some of the insurance carriers have made it less, like a 3 month. A lot of things, as Dr. Ianelli could speak to this, can happen within those 3 months. So if you have to start a claim over, so they want to make it, that's another one of their things they're putting in place for a year. I mean, that would be great because their counts could go down. They can't be treated. There's a million things. They were hospitalized. They're, you know, Dr. E, you could probably
Yeah,
speak better to
millions.
all the things.
There are a million reasons, and Jane and I have worked long enough in the field to have seen every single one of them.
Yes, unfortunately, it's sad. I'm
Angel,
hoping all this
I am
happens.
uplifted, though. I am uplifted with the fact that I think from an old movie, I think Broadcast News, right? I'm mad as hell, and I'm just not going to take it anymore. I really think that between people like Jane and the medical teams and the entire hospital systems and all the people that work their tails off on behalf of our survivors slash thrivers, we're all here for you guys. And I want to just take a minute and thank Jane for her time, her talents, and her friendship. Angel, any parting words for Miss Jane?
Well, first, again, thank you for sharing your expertise and also being willing to step up and say what you have to say. And that's what I think it's what I'm getting a lot from this episode. And that is we all have to speak up. And I think that if we speak up in numbers, numbers creates a huge wave, and we need a tidal wave. So I'm hoping, and I know that what this episode will bring will only bring more people to the table. And hopefully with our thoughts and our good prayers that this will create the tidal wave that we need that will allow this thing to really take off. So for that, I thank you.
Yeah,
Thank
and
you.
Angel, yeah, no, Jane, echoes and
Thanks.
kudos. We usually end the podcast, Jane, in a number of different ways, but generally with the theme of thanking Angel and thanking our board of directors and thanking our sponsors and donors and things like that. But we're going to go in a little different direction today. Today we are here to really tell our survivors slash thrivers that there are people in your corner. People like Jane Capozzella, who represents one of many, many, many people. You may not even know them. You may never meet them in your journey of your treatments. You may never even know their names, but let me tell you, they're there. And you know what? Even though you don't know them, they know you. They breathe, they live, they sweat, they cry. They are so concerned about you guys. They're so concerned about your well-being, and they want to give you every chance you have to overcome your cancer because cancer is not easy. You guys have been absolutely, your lives have been basically blown apart by this diagnosis and by the treatments. And the last thing you need is to worry about things like insurance companies and pre-authorizations or anything as silly and mundane as that. Jane, on behalf of all of us here at the Croc Podcast, representing you and all of our colleagues that are working on behalf of our patients, we salute you, we thank you, we tip our caps, and we absolutely adore you. And to our survivors, we end this podcast as we end every single one of them, wishing you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. Peace.